This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight. This is a special pre-recorded program while VOA headquarters resolves some technical issues. I'm your host, Yehi Suhib, in Washington. Coming up...
We are deadly serious about saving lives. And those who want to take chances must, of course, meet the wrath of the South African state.
That was South African President Cyril Ramaphosa on the lockdown that he has imposed to slow the spread of COVID-19 virus. Details coming up. Also, Zimbabwe is allowing the use of the U.S. dollar after banning it last year. And despite a raging jihadist conflict, a recent kidnapping of a leading opposition politician, and the coronavirus epidemic, citizens of Mali will be voting on parliamentary elections this Sunday. We'll have these stories and more in this special VOA Africa program. But first, our top story. South Africa is officially under lockdown, and the usually crowded streets of Johannesburg and other cities resemble ghost towns. The government has deployed the army and the police to enforce the edict, and ministers aren't mincing words on those who dare violate the move. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Dressed in a full army uniform last night, President Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the commander-in-chief, ordered security forces to make sure everyone stays indoors for 21 days.
We are deadly serious about saving lives. And those who want to take chances must, of course, meet the wrath of the South African state.
Troops and police have taken over the streets in all cities, with roadblocks set up on many major roads. Defense Minister Mapisa Nqakula says only those doing essential services, visiting a doctor or pharmacy, or topping up on groceries, will be allowed to pass after providing full proof.
The SANDF will show that there are no unauthorized entries at the closed ports of entries during this lockdown. Mobile and foot patrols throughout the country to enforce curfew and restrict movement of people and supported by roadblocks, road closures, cordon and search.
Minister of Police Bekicele says anyone going out on false pretenses or resisting instruction to get tested, self-isolate or go to quarantine centers will receive no mercy.
To show that you are serious, if you break these laws, we are 6 months in or fine or both. Two people have been charged already, charged with attempted murder.
Renowned political analyst Ralph Mateka says he has never seen such a united purpose amongst the government, opposition parties, business, labor and non-governmental organizations.
I've never seen them being so close to each other. I've never seen them sharing the stage in the manner in which they've been sharing the stage when the president announced those lockdown measures. I see a sense of unity.
The government says the lockdown will be characterized by vigorous testing in homes and tracking of people who have come in contact with those found to be positive for COVID-19. Analysts say the economy is expected to take a hit as a result of the lockdown, with small businesses and the self-employed likely to suffer most. Citizens have expressed frustration with the restrictions, with some likening them to house arrest. However, with 2 people dead and 1,000 already infected by the coronavirus, there is widespread agreement that the lockdown is key in stopping the spread of the virus and saving lives. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
In South Africa, health activists and the media are highlighting the stark contrast between the government's present response to the COVID-19 crisis and the way in which the country's leaders acted when HIV began spreading massively in the 1990s. During those years, South Africa had a president, Thabo Mbeki, who denied that HIV caused AIDS. He refused treatment to people who had contracted the virus. Hundreds of thousands of people died, and the country now has the highest HIV burden in the world. Johannesburg correspondent Darren Taylor had a conversation about the different response this time with the chief editor of the Bikisa Center of Health Journalism, Mia Malan. Don't worry, they didn't have to break social isolation for this chat. Mia Malan happens to be his wife.
The South African government's response to HIV during the HIV denialist period and to COVID-19 currently is like day and night. COVID-19 response is based on evidence. It's a very decisive government, setting an example for other countries. Compared to the HIV response, which was really late and many people died as a result, unnecessary, and the government really only started to act by giving people access to treatment when they were taken to court. But in the case of COVID-19, the government acted by its own will. The president is listening to scientists, where during the HIV period, Thabo Mbeki was fighting with scientists. In this case, the government is moving really fast. We're doing all the things that we can learn from other countries, evidence-based prevention things, like we announced a travel ban for high-risk countries relatively early in our epidemic, banning large public gatherings, closing down schools. And we're very likely in South Africa to see later this week or early next week a total shutdown of the country, because we've seen from other countries that if you have a total shutdown earlier in the epidemic, it's more effective than having it later, like in the case of Italy, where they have a total shutdown, but it's too late. The virus has already spread everywhere. The other difference is during the HIV period, the media's partners were the HIV activists, because they were the people with the correct science and they fought against government. So there was a very strong alliance between journalists and activists. But in the COVID-19 epidemic, the partners of the media is the government. There's no gap for activists going against the government here, because the government is having an evidence-based response. So the activists who fought against the government during the HIV period now are friends of government and are supporting government. And as a result, the media has also become a partner, and the reporting of the media is far more concentrated on giving out information that help people in South Africa adhering better to the government's regulations, as opposed to fighting the government for their actions.
So now we have government cooperating, we have activists cooperating, we have media cooperating and giving the correct messages to the people. What are the consequences of that?
Well, the consequences are that we will be acting as one country. There will be social solidarity, which is a really, really important thing in the response to COVID-19, because to get everyone to adhere to regulations of, for instance, staying inside of their homes, it's literally impossible for the police of any country to control everyone and see where they are. So if you have social solidarity and everyone supports those regulations of the government in principle, it will help us to police each other effectively, to adhere to those regulations.
And will literally save lives.
It will hopefully save lives. What we've seen in other countries, for instance, South Korea and Taiwan and Singapore, that acted very, very early in the epidemic, we've seen lower death rates and we've seen a flattening of the curve. In other words, we've seen the infection spreading at a slower rate. The whole aim of the response in COVID-19 is we cannot stop this virus. It doesn't matter how many things you do, it's going to spread. But you can slow down the rate at which it spread. And the reason you would want to do that, to have it spread slower over a longer period, is because it will result in health systems being less overwhelmed. You will not have as many patients at one stage that your health system can't handle, as we've seen in Italy.
The Thabo Mbeki administration's response to HIV essentially led to a huge spread of HIV in South Africa. What influence would that have on South Africa's COVID-19 response?
The issue is people who have HIV and TB who are not on treatment. Now, in South Africa, our latest household survey shows us that 4 out of every 10 people with HIV in South Africa don't know their status, which means they're not on treatment. And we've seen from the response to other viruses like measles, for instance, or the flu, that they respond to it worse because they've got compromised immune systems if they're not on treatment. treatment. So if we take the clues from those viruses, there's a likelihood that people with HIV who are not on treatment might respond badly to the virus. It's possible that they are more likely to become critically ill as a result of infection with a new coronavirus because they've got compromised immune systems. But it's really important to point out that we really just don't know yet because there's no data in other countries that we can go on because none of those countries face the same challenges of high HIV and TB infection rates.
That was the chief editor of the South Africa's Bekisisa Center for Healthy Journalism, Mia Malan, in conversation with her husband, VOA's Darren Taylor, in Johannesburg. Despite raging jihadist conflict, the recent kidnapping of a leading opposition politician and the coronavirus pandemic, Malians will vote Sunday in a long-delayed parliamentary election. The election has been delayed several times since 2018, mostly over security concerns. And now COVID-19 seems to have added the country's chronic security problem. The kidnapped opposition politician is Soumaila Cisse. Reuters reports that his bodyguard was killed and two others wounded when unidentified gunmen ambushed the group Wednesday in the northern region of Timbuktu. He is being held hostage with six members of his delegation. Militants with links to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State launch frequent attacks on civilians and military targets in the area, but there was no immediate claim of responsibility. Cisse is Mali's leading opposition figure. He lost 2013 and 2018 elections to President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. Mali's government, in a statement yesterday, said it is taking all practical measures to find the missing politician. You were listening to a special recorded program on VOA Africa. I'm Yehi Suhi. VOA is experiencing some technical difficulties, so we are offering this program recorded earlier. We aim to return to our normal programming within a few days, and in the meantime, thanks for listening to African News Tonight. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Uganda's government has resorted to the use of its spy network to trace all recent arrivals who are evading quarantine to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The operatives have been drawn from the security agencies, including Military Intelligence, CMI, Internal Security Organization, ISO, and Crime Intelligence Unit, CIU. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Despite calls from the Minister of Health for recent arrivals from Dubai to present themselves for testing for the coronavirus, many have sought to evade the testing and quarantine. Dubai was not among the high-risk countries whose travelers were to be quarantined upon arrival at Uganda's Entebbe Airport. But the latest statistics show the majority of Uganda's positive COVID-19 cases came from Dubai. Uganda has deployed spies from all security agencies to trace everyone who arrived from Dubai since the beginning of March, but weren't tested for COVID-19 and aren't under any form of quarantine, as they pose a high risk to the populace. Fred Enanga is the Uganda police spokesperson.
Our responses depend on the intelligence that these surveillance teams are also giving us. Our surveillance teams have given us intelligence on some people who initially were not blacklisted due to the fact that one of the countries had not been placed in Category 1, and so they got easy passage like it had been indicated. So our surveillance teams have followed up these cases.
Uganda has also deployed 200 military police officers to guard quarantine and isolation centers to check for escapes. Lieutenant Colonel Henry Obo is the spokesperson of Uganda's land forces.
Some people escaping away from the safe zones for treatment, but we responded and deployed military police. Places you'll find military police reinforcing other security agencies. We wouldn't wish to have a situation where we are moving away from enforcing to coercion. If certain people would wish to move away from what the country has agreed that we should do, then we shall have no option in coercing the observance of these guidelines.
There have been reports of people escaping from quarantine centers, while others, including members of parliament, relatives of ministers and security echelons, refused to be quarantined. A group of six Chinese nationals were caught escaping quarantine and trying to find their way to the Democratic Republic of Congo through Uganda's Zombo district. Two of these have since tested positive to COVID-19. The Minister of Health says once they complete treatment and quarantine, they'll be arraigned on charges punishable by 2 months imprisonment. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
After banning use of the U.S. dollar last year, Zimbabwe is allowing it again as the government grapples to keep the struggling economy afloat amid the challenges posed by the COVID-19 pandemic. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Zimbabwe's central bank announced measures yesterday to reintroduce foreign currency for domestic use, saying it's trying to ease the impact of the coronavirus on the moribund economy and make it easier for the public to conduct business. Observers say the move will only make things worse for most people, as retailers are likely to charge in foreign currency rather than the RTGS. The central bank pegged the U.S. dollar at 25 RTGS dollars in a move seen as overturning the floating exchange rate for the interbank market that Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube announced last month. Industrialist Sifela Nijabangwe says industry was surprised by the move.
Basically, instead of going back to multi-currency, used to be the end of the RTGS. So now you worry if you're holding RTGS. Because now we have to find a way to set our wages and salaries in U.S. dollars. You can't go back to those wages and salaries. At the moment, I think that's what labor would want. You can't.
Central Bank Governor John Mangudya says the move takes effect immediately and will promote social distancing in the country's crowded banks. Mangudya also says tobacco farmers and others with free funds can now deposit them into banks and transact electronically. Moses Sigaro, an economic analyst, sees the move as good because authorities are accepting that the country never actually de-dollarized.
So I'm glad they've done that, and that's the good part. They've now allowed businesses to charge in U.S. dollars. But subtly in the statement, the buyers, the customers, are being urged to buy by transfers, by using transfers. This means they want the buyers to bank the money first and then purchase using transfers. Simply, it will not work, which is now the bad side. Once the customers are charged in dollars, they will simply buy in cash. It's as simple as that. So there is a tacit acknowledgement from the authorities that
public confidence in the banking system is reportedly very low, and depositors will be reluctant to bank their cash. Critics say the move is really allowing the central bank to take depositors' funds at a rate much lower than the parallel market or interbank market, which saw the U.S. trading at 35 to the U.S. dollar. Igaro says the local currency should be reintroduced gradually, and fixing the rate is self-defeating.
But bad in the sense that they have now fixed the exchange rate at 25 to 1. When only 2 weeks ago they removed the controls on the bureau de change for any step towards liberalization of the foreign exchange market. So going back to the 25 to 1 principle is exactly the same problem where we were when we were on the 1 to 1 parity. So they have, that is another flip-flop. They should just go the whole throttle and open up the market and let the market determine everything. Everything will fall into place. And over time, the Zim dollar will gradually grow acceptability.
Economic analyst Dumis Banda sees the move will kill the black market, although others say that there are not enough U.S. dollars to sustain such a scenario in which the RTGS is no longer required for use. The economy is widely seen as suffering from serious structural challenges, which require a more consultative decision-making process. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigono.
Malawi's Vice President Salos Chilema has filed a lawsuit against the president, Peter Mutharika, because he has not fired the electoral commissioners who managed last year's election. Chilema, who heads the opposition UTM party, argues the Constitutional Court has ordered that members of the Malawi Election Commission be fired and that the government pass new laws to organize a new vote. Last month, the Constitutional Court ruled last year's election should be declared null and void and new elections be held in May. The Electoral Commission declared Mutharika the winner of last year's election with 35% of the vote. Chilama and Lazarus Chakwera have claimed the vote was full of irregularities and should be redone. Mutharika has ignored the Constitutional Court's ruling. As cases of COVID-19 increase in Ghana and supplies of face masks dwindle globally, one NGO is collaborating with a local and international network to create fabric face masks to get quickly to those in need. And Stacey Knott reports on communities coming together to support Ghana.
American Renee Adam watched local and international orders for the fair trade clothing and household goods she sells through a social enterprise in Ghana plummet. But she also followed the increasing global concerns about shortages of face masks. This inspired Adam and a growing network she is working with both in Ghana and internationally to put plans in place to sew and supply washable and reusable face masks made from the colourful printed cotton Ghana is famous for. Adam is a co-founder of Global Mamas, an NGO which supports women to support themselves by creating goods in Ghana which are mostly sold to overseas markets. Speaking via a messaging application, Adam says they will not be making medical-grade masks, but she believes the fabric masks can play a part in protecting users in this crisis, especially when medical masks are in short supply.
This complete change in focus to fabric face mask production has brought everyone together with a single focus to produce as many masks as possible. It's all hands on deck, and we are already training bead assemblers and weavers in how to prepare the ties for the masks in order to make the sewing portion for the skilled seamstresses more efficient.
Aside from helping to keep people safe, Adam says a top priority for her was to keep the women who work for Global Mamas earning an income so they can still support their families and communities. Elizabeth Adams is one of these women. She is a sewing instructor and technical designer for Global Mamas. Also speaking to VOA via a messaging app, Adams says she and her colleagues are happy to be part of the initiative and to help people keep healthy.
We are sustaining livelihoods here. So instead of just letting 400 women or so go home, then they get something to do. So we still have them around. We are sustaining the economy in a certain way.
Other organisations have also been quick to join this initiative, both in Ghana and across the globe. Joseph Aro Yobo, the executive director of Ghanaian health non-profit Total Family Health, will help make available the masks through its supply chains in Ghana. Also speaking to VOA through a messaging app, he says he is pleased to support this local solution that relies on local resources for a local market.
It would also reduce the lead times that it will take for these commodities to become available in country because it is locally produced. And you know, in these times, time is of great essence, and any delay in the supply chain would have their consequences.
President of the American Chamber of Commerce in Ghana, Aisha Bedwe, says the organization is planning to tell their member companies about the project so they too can support it, while other development agencies are showing support, Adam says. Global Mamas says it has samples ready for the masks. It will next seek approval from Ghanaian authorities to get them out into the nation. Adam hopes that initiatives like this and the fast actions of Ghana's government to date on combating COVID-19 will see Ghana become an African success story in stamping out the virus. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
And that wraps up this special VOA Africa program. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in to this recorded program while VOA resolves its technical issues. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.